Randy Roth is no stranger to our airwaves. He authored a book, The Price of Paradise, and hosted a show with the same name on HPR1. He was also one of the authors of the essay Broken Trust, which led to an upheaval at the powerful Bishop Estate Trust, now known simply as Kamehameha Schools. Under threat of losing their charitable tax status, it could no longer be business as usual. Roth is a law professor emeritus at the University of Hawaii. He penned a paper for the Hawaii Law Journal that was published to close out 2023. It addresses some high-profile corruption cases, the Bishop Estate case, and the conviction of Honolulu Police Chief Louis Kealoha and his deputy prosecutor wife, Catherine. Both are now serving time behind bars for their part in a conspiracy to frame Catherine's uncle, Gerard Puana. Here's Roth on what needs to change.
I think the media mostly focused on criminal corruption, and there's certainly been a lot of that in past years, most recently the Kealoha group of crimes. And I wanted to focus on what I call non-criminal corruption, the go-along to get-along bystanders, if you will, who engage in willful blindness or some other form of intentional ignorance. Because they want to go along to get along. They don't want to upset people in a position of power or people who have friends in a position of power. And that's what enables and facilitates and ultimately protects the criminal wrongdoers. So what I tried to do was focus on two scandals that everybody thinks about the crimes that were involved, involving the Kealohas and earlier the Bishop Estate controversy. And I focused on, for example, in the Bishop Estate controversy, the role of the justices, which certainly they didn't commit any crimes, or at least I don't see where they committed any crimes. And yet, I believe I laid out in the article a pretty good case for them having engaged in a great deal of what I would call non-criminal corruption. And then more importantly to me, I focused on the organizations that are pretty much run by lawyers that are supposed to be providing oversight, if you will, to members of the judiciary to hold accountable a judge or a justice who's engaged in anything unethical or, they don't use the term, but non-criminal corruption. And just one after another, the organizations that are there to provide accountability. The Bar Association, the lawyers as a group are supposed to be serving as a watchdog of sorts on the judiciary. And yet evidently, I don't know of any other compelling explanation for it, evidently lawyers individually and collectively were afraid to point out what was really obvious at the time, that there was a great deal of wrongdoing, violations of the law, part of that Bishop Estate controversy. According to 60 Minutes, when they did the retrospective, they said that the trustees, which had been appointed by the Supreme Court justices, had turned Princess Pauahi's charitable trust into a candy store for the state's political establishment. And the Kealoha series of cases, again, we see these watchdog organizations that apparently didn't see what, in hindsight, they should have seen. And if they did see it, they pretended not to see it, or at least that would seem to be the evidence. So more than anything, I wanted to put a spotlight on what I refer to as non-criminal corruption, which is very different than criminal corruption. But without non-criminal corruption, there would be a lot less criminal corruption because, again, the non-criminal corruption, it enables, facilitates, and eventually protects the criminal wrongdoers.
I just am thinking of these cases. These are community leaders, folks who many people looked up to and respected, and yet, you know, at the end of the day, there was broken trust. There was a, you know, public trust, and they betrayed it. The convictions were just stunning, and it took an outsider to bring it to light.
Well, that's the thing is, and I explained in my article the various factors that I think make it understandable why there would be more non-criminal corruption in Hawaii than in other places. That doesn't justify it, but I think if we take a step back and look at what's unique to Hawaii, it's hardly surprising that we have this stronger tendency, a more prevalent tendency to go along to get along than what generally you find in other places. But recognizing that there are reasons for it and tolerating it are two completely different things. And hopefully my article would cause some people to say, you know what, we need individually, and certainly when we've got the protection of organizations like the Bar Association, for example, or the Judicial Selection Commission or the Judicial Conduct Commission, there are times when you just need to stand up to power, even when there is the threat of adverse consequences. You know, you cross the wrong people in a lot of other places, and you may, in order to thrive, you may need to actually make a physical move to another place. But almost without exception, there are other places that are within at least a half hour drive of Tutu and, you know, where your roots are. In Hawaii, you cross the wrong people and it affects your ability to thrive. It may affect your ability to simply survive financially in Hawaii. And now you're talking about thousands of miles and a very expensive airplane ride for you and the kids, the grandkids, whatever. For me, somebody with relatively shallow roots in Hawaii, to point out non-criminal corruption isn't as risky an affair as would be for somebody with deep roots. And again, in the article, I list that, or distance, as just one of about seven or eight different factors that I believe are unique to Hawaii and help us at least understand why we have a bigger problem with non-criminal corruption than a lot of other places.
You'd like to think that these watchdog groups are doing that, you know, watching, and yet they have blind spots.
Well, they have blind spots, and the question is whether they're really blind or whether it's, you know, what we call willfully blind, that they've conveniently avoided seeing, or at least processing in their own minds having seen, or maybe simply keeping quiet about what they had seen and knew that they saw. You know, we're all human, and the human condition is such that, especially when we're talking about the interests of our loved ones, there's a natural tendency to avoid doing something that's going to adversely affect the people that you care about. And in Hawaii, an individual may be untouchable. They may be a tenured professor at the university, or for some other reason have a form of protection. But I got relatives, I've got kids, and I've got all sorts of stakeholders, if you will. And so people in Hawaii have to be willing to sacrifice their own interests, and unfortunately maybe the interests of others that they care about, and that can be a pretty big price to pay. So it's understandable when groups that are, you know, I call them watchdog groups like the Commission on Judicial Conduct, or the Judicial Selection Commission, or the Committee on Judicial Independence and Accountability. These are folks that if they're not willing to take those kinds of risks, then they should turn down the opportunity to serve on such prestigious boards. I don't expect Joe Citizen from, you know, out on the street that sees something. I don't expect nearly as much from them as I expect from one of these, I call them establishment insiders, that get appointed to these prestigious boards and then proceed to not see or pretend not to see evidence of wrongdoing.
Yeah, and you've got to be able to step up and be uncomfortable to say something.
Exactly. And let's be realistic. At the time that you'd have to step up and say something, you don't know how it's going to turn out.
That's Randy Ross, author of a piece in the Hawaii Bar Journal entitled Public Corruption in the Land of Aloha. We'll continue our conversation with Ross after a short break. See nothing, hear nothing, say nothing. That's the upshot of conversation we had with Randy Roth, who penned a paper for the Hawaii Bar Journal highlighting public corruption cases and what's often a reluctance to rock the boat and address institutional corruption. Let's get back to our interview.
You know, the Ke Aloha, for example, if it hadn't been for the extremely good lawyering job that Catherine Ke Aloha's, you know, the lawyer for her uncle, who had been framed, who was put on trial for having stolen the mailbox of his niece and her husband, the police chief. If the uncle's lawyer had not done a spectacular lawyering job in representing that uncle, to me it's almost like world record quality of lawyering. If client comes in and he doesn't know his client, and the client says, I've been accused of this serious crime, and they've got a video, and they've got, the police chief says, yep, it's me, and they've got other people who say it's me, and describing the situation as it appeared at that time, the lawyer, Alexander Silbert, who has since written the book Mailbox Conspiracy, which is an absolutely great book. If Alexander had done a typical lawyering job, the uncle would be in prison and the Ke Alohas would still be on the job right now. There weren't, I believe, ever going to be whistleblowers from inside the police department or inside the prosecutor's office. I believe, but for a really, really outstanding lawyering job by Alexander Silbert, I think Cass Ke Aloha would still be in the prosecutor's office today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Her husband would still be the police chief today. And that's a little sobering, and it helps, I think, people to understand why there weren't any whistleblowers in the police department or prosecutor's office, because there's just no guarantee that you're going to have a happy ending like we have in this case. And I call this a happy ending because the Ke Alohas got convicted and went to prison. But that was anything but a certainty when Alexander, you know, did his outstanding lawyering job.
Yeah, Ali Silbert did a good job. And it's not over. You know, we've got the former city prosecutor, you know, his trial's coming up. You have the city's top lawyer, the corporation counsel, Donna Leong, Max Sword from the police commission, Roy Amamiya from the managing director's office. Those folks are awaiting trial. And supposedly another shoe may drop, you know, in the public corruption case, you know, there at the legislature. You know, we've got the two already in jail, Senator Kalani English and former House Representative Ty Cullen. It's very sobering, I guess, as we start 2024, yeah, just to be aware of what's out there and what could be coming.
When you mention the two legislators, it's a little bit sobering to realize that they weren't under investigation. It was the investigation of the fellow on Maui that my understanding is that they had a wiretap on his phone. And fortunately, in terms of catching the bad guys, those legislators called in soliciting bribes. Had they not called in, had they been, you know, just waiting to, you know, for another time or another person to ask for a bribe or whatever. My point is, when you look back at the circumstances of how the various wrongdoers on these criminal corruption cases, how they got caught, in each case, it almost seems like there's an element of luck. And that makes me wonder, how many times is there an absence of luck? A lawyer in Alexander Silbert does a normal job as opposed to a really, really almost unbelievably effective job of lawyering, or the wiretap doesn't catch somebody who's not already suspected of some kind of wrongdoing.
Yeah, and then, you know, we did see the whole line of employees from the Department of Planning and Permitting and the corruption in that department and the payoffs, the bribery. It was systemic in that case.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it involves so many, and I'm not sure, as I recall, it was, you know, more than just a couple. To me, that suggests that more people than just the ones who were convicted of the crime knew or had reason to believe that there was a level of corruption. Maybe they weren't lawyers. Maybe they didn't know it was criminal corruption, but clearly some type of wrongdoing. And yet, maybe there were whistleblowers, and that has just not come to light. But the impression I have is over a number of years, there was an absence of whistleblowers from inside that office, which, again, would hardly be shocking, but it's disappointing.
And so what do you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I would like to say that there's something that the people in charge can do to make corruption go away. And certainly the Foley Commission, I think, is making some good recommendations for changes in the law and that sort of thing. So I don't want to, you know, minimize too much the job of others to fix this corruption problem. But I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to each of us as individuals. And as individuals, recognize that we're human and we're not on a higher moral level necessarily than other people who've engaged in what I call willful blindness or other forms of non-criminal corruption. And if we each just determine that we're going to do the best we can to speak up if we see something that isn't right, and we're in a position inside the Department of Planning and Permitting or whatever, we're in a position to point to specific evidence. I think if individually we say, you know what, I'm gonna take a chance when circumstances are such that either it's me or nobody. In other words, if not me, who? If not now, when? And if on an individual level, enough of us kind of resolve to rise to the occasion in that way, I think the state of Hawaii will be far better off.
All right. Something to think about as we start this new year. But thank you so much, Randy Roth.
Okie dokie. Bye-bye.
Appreciate your time. That was Randy Roth, who wrote a piece for the Hawaii Bar Journal to highlight recent instances of institutional corruption. We'll have links to that article on the conversation page of our website later today.